agenda number 15. This issue relates to the elimination of gains arising from downstream transactions between an investor and its associate or joint venture. The issue arises when the amount of gains from a downstream transaction to be eliminated exceeds the amount of the investor's interest in an associate or joint venture in the investor's statement of financial position. The Interpretation Committee discussed this issue twice at its March and May 2013 meetings. We also brought this issue to the board at the small group meeting in June 2013. First, we considered two views. View A is that the elimination of the gain should discontinue when the investment balance in an associate or joint venture in the investor's financial statements reduces to zero. View B is that the elimination of the gain should continue even if the investment balance reduces to zero. We thought that view B is the acceptable accounting because guidance as to elimination of gains or losses from downstream transactions in ISC 28 clearly states that an entity should eliminate the investor's share in the associate or joint venture's gains or losses resulting from these transactions with no exception. The Interpretations Committee agreed with this view in its March meeting. And this conclusion led us to ask the subsequent question, which is, how should the gains to be eliminated in excess of the carrying amount of the entity's interest in the associate or joint venture be presented? In the May Interpretation Committee's meeting, we discussed three methods, as you can see in paragraph 15 of this paper. Method 1 is to present as deferred gain. Method 2A is to reduce the related asset, that is, in Submitter's example, the lease receivable. But if the related asset is cash or cash equivalents, recognize the eliminated gain in profit or loss. And method 2B is to reduce the related asset, but if the related asset is cash or cash equivalents, present the eliminated gain as a deferred gain. We thought that method 1 is the only method that is consistent with the requirement of IS 28. The reason is that IS 28 states that equity method procedures are similar to the consolidation procedures, and method 2A and method 2B are not similar to the consolidation procedures. Although method 1 would not meet the recognition criteria for liability in the conceptual framework for financial reporting, we supported method 1 because only this method can clearly show how much gain from a downstream transaction is eliminated. The Interpretations Committee agreed that method 1 would be the appropriate accounting. We recommended to the Interpretation Committee that we should not add this issue to its agenda because in order to add guidance on this specific issue, we were concerned that we might also need to add more general guidance on downstream and upstream transactions. However, the Interpretation Committee did not agree with the step recommendation on that and noted that it is more important to deal with this issue in order to reduce diversity in practice. So the Interpretation Committee decided to recommend that the ISB amend IS 28 through a narrow scope amendment project. We have set out proposed amendment in Appendix B of this paper. So my question to the board is that does the ISB agree with the Interpretation Committee's recommendation?
Yes, thank you. I have slight concern on your proposal. In your example, you show the joint venture, and in the case you have 60% or 40%, and if I follow your example, it seems like your proposal is reasonable. However, most common cases is not like your example. Actually, this 28 covers associates. So in the case of associates, normally partner is a parent company of that associate. Say for example, I and the Pat is a friend, and we are going to establish a new company, which is Pat's subsidiary. And Pat asked me to join up to 20%. So then the Pat has an 80% portion of that subsidiary. That is my associates. Although we had a transaction long time, but because Pat shifted her business to her subsidiary, then now my business is going to shift it to these associates. But eventually, these associates belongs to Pat's group, consolidated group. Substantially, I think this is my business is continuation of previous business. So therefore, it seems to me very strange to recognize liability if my profit exceeds the interest of associates. Because basically, everything, every loss would be covered by PAP anyway. So to recognizing liability exceeding further losses exceeding the carrying amount, beyond zero, seems to be very strange. And if I read your paper, paragraph 12 and 13, you picked up paragraph 39 of IS 28. This is talking about the loss recognized in the associates. And in the case, the loss was recognized in the associates. Paragraph 39 says you need to make a judgment. And if you are not obliged to separately to guarantee or to bear the excessive loss, then you don't have to recognize the loss exceeding to zero. So the idea is, like I explained, this is explained in paragraph 32 as well. So therefore, to me, it seems to be very strange to make it a rule that whenever you have a excessive gain to in this IS 28, you have to recognize liability. To make it the rule is very strange. I don't think I can agree with your proposal.
So, Tak, can I ask, how would you eliminate your share of the gain?
Yeah, in this sense, my first inclination is, rather than alternative B, my inclination is alternative A, rather than alternative B. However, I do understand the paragraph 28 clearly says you cannot recognize more gain than the unrelated party's interest. So therefore, as an interpretation, alternative A might be correct. As an interpretation of IS 28, perhaps alternative A is correct. But I would think paragraph 28 and the paragraph 39 is really conflicting. So therefore, if you ask ISB to make an amendment, then we are not making an interpretation of IS 28, paragraph 28, but we are making an improvement of IS 28 to solve the conflict of paragraph 28 and 29. So we should be neutral in the first place.
So you wouldn't eliminate all of your share of the gain?
Yeah. And that is the amendment we should make. And in order to make whether we should eliminate all or not depends on the judgment. Like paragraph 39 says, if this fact and circumstance says you would not be obliged to recognize any further losses, then you don't have to eliminate. But if the circumstance says there might be a chance you have to recognize a further loss, then you have to eliminate. So, such kind of amendment is necessary.
I think that as a point. Transaction, the nature of the transaction is a bit different when you transfer an asset into an associate which is controlled 80% by the other partner, or when you transfer it to an associate in which you have a myriad of non-controlling interests, each of them having 2%. The nature is a bit different. But how to make it operational is different, is quite difficult.
But still, in IS 28, para 39, we are requiring to make a judgment anyway. So same judgment could be done in the paragraph 28. That is what I thought.
And I think really the key is to the gain which has arisen in this boundary merger, to eliminate that should be the key. And then really the problem is, okay, what is the counter-entry? And I think the only solution is to have this deferred liability or deferred gain. And therefore I am totally with the staff recommendation, and I don't think it should not be judgment, because I think it is a huge opportunity if you would allow not to eliminate this gain, even if you have only 20% interest. And I would really recommend that we follow staff recommendation, because I think key is elimination of the gain. And the only way I think it can be done is, okay, is against liability. Clearly it's not a conceptual, in line with the conceptual framework, but okay, is the only the technical solution I think is available.
Can I see who supports the staff recommendation? Okay, that brings us to the conclusion.
I would talk.
Okay, that brings us to the conclusion of our board meeting. Thank you very much. Thank you.